Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a perfect day to get some stuff done in and around your house. Gorgeous weather for the next couple of days after the big storm blew through last night. We'll check your complete forecast coming up in just a few minutes. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. What'd you think of that storm, by the way?
I saw a little bit of rain and then went to sleep. I slept through the whole thing.
Did you really? Then you turned it in early.
I did. I think I might have got a bad ice cube during happy hour. I'm not really certain about that. But
Somebody slipped something in on you?
I was at the porch at the house watching it rain and just enjoying it. I love a good storm. I love sitting on the porch and watching it rain and then suddenly looked at the clock and went, oh, no, I've got to get up at 4 a.m. tomorrow. I better go to bed. And I wake up this morning and I see all the pictures of all the beautiful rainbows everywhere that I didn't see.
Right. I've seen a lot of those myself on Facebook. But what a timely rain.
Yes.
You know, this time of year, we've been blessed so far. I don't think it's been too hot. Was a little bit yesterday in that thunderstorm. It kind of, you know, it made its way here and it's going to make for great weather this upcoming week, or the next couple of days at least.
Next couple of days, and then after Tuesday, or during Tuesday, we see showers return. But low humidity, high today, right around 80, and 82 again for tomorrow, and a little bit warmer on Monday, but the humidity levels expected to be lower than it has been, and lots of sunshine. So if you have things to do, which I do, I've got some stuff to talk about. I was on vacation last week and the wife had me working around the house. A lot going on.
Oh, I've been doing that myself too. Yeah. Taking advantage of the weather. It's been nice and we really haven't pushed 90 degrees, maybe a day or two.
Yeah.
So far this summer. So things are looking really good. The rains have been timely. It was getting a little dry there, so I hope that rain helps some people that don't want to water.
Mm-hmm.
I do water, as a matter of fact, when I need to. And it just seems like, you know, we have enough moisture, and then all of a sudden it just starts getting a little dry.
Sure.
And our lawns will tell us that, and some of our plants, too.
Mm.
You know, if you're having to water a little bit more often because things are wilting in the landscape, go ahead and take care of those plants. You know, the more you look after our plants in the landscape or your plants, the happier they're going to be, and the more, you know, they're going to be healthier. Yeah. So less problems down the road. So take advantage of it.
Also going to be a great day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. And you were just talking about how you just got some new stock in down at Jackson's. And
every couple of days we get new stock in, and so do some of the other nurseries for the most part that are our local leaders here in the tri-state area. Mm-hmm. So don't throw the towel in. It's not over. We have a lot of planting ahead of us. Even better, just to let you know, at Jackson Florist and Garden Center, we're offering 25% off of our perennials, trees, and shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not old stock. It's new stuff coming in. So we're trying to promote, hey, continue planting.
Right.
It's a beautiful summer thus far. It's been really, really nice. And a lot of other garden centers, Todd had reached out to us from down at Baton's. You know, they have sales going on. A lot of other garden centers have sales going on. So support your local garden centers and get out there and see what's still available. A lot of fresh plant material that looks awesome.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's always a great time to plant, and especially if you can save a little money. You
know, why not?
That is important, too.
Absolutely. Now, and go ahead.
Don't call me a goat head.
Go ahead.
Had an interesting situation there at our house. I wasn't really ready to move some ornamental grasses, which I'd been asking you about the last couple of weeks, to try to eliminate the hill. We've given up and just are going to load it up with ornamental grasses. Lisa took advantage of a friend's help. Our buddy George Bruns came over. We rented a bobcat, and she went at it. And then suddenly, my vacation or staycation dance card was full. The dance card.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was move plants, grasses, dig holes, shuffle dirt around, bring mulch in, and other kinds of things that just sort of ate up the week. But, you know, the place is really starting to look great. Not that it was bad before, but I just wasn't ready to move those grasses.
Just what was it before, if it wasn't bad? What did you have to tear up? What did you?
Well, it was the back of Mammy's yard where we had torn down the old compost bin. There were also some ornamental grasses and some lilies back
okay.
there. And where all of those, where those houses sit up on the hill behind us, you know, all that water comes down to mm-hmm. the drain. There's mm-hmm. a storm drain there. And we had tried a couple of ways to get around it, decorating, you know, putting grasses in to slow the water down. But we decided we're going to celebrate that and bring in some stones and just create a little causeway there for the water to run right to the storm.
So like a dry creek bed.
Yes.
Kind of set up. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's interesting. So it wasn't your yard.
Mammy and Pappy.
Ah, gotcha. I was just curious what was going on in your yard.
It was part of our yard, too. Back behind the shed where the
right
wood pile
the
was.
The whipping post?
The whipping
got
post.
Got it.
Where the wood pile was. She moved a lot of that stuff around, or George moved it with Jake and the bobcat. And so we cleaned that area up, leveled out a couple of things in the back where we had some
major construction.
Major.
Tom.
It was it was amazing. We still got a lot to do, and I got a lot of questions to ask because, as you said, last couple of weeks, that this isn't the ideal time, but if you've got to do it, you got to do it.
You have to do it if you got to do it. And what Ernie's talking about, we'll tell you when we come out of the break. It's moving things, you know. Is the summer the best time to do it?
Right.
Hang out with us. Give us a call, 749-B105. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Austin on the line from Goshen. Hey, Austin?
Yes, sir.
Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You have a pear tree question?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Austin, do you have us on speakerphone?
Not anymore.
Okay, great, because it makes it a little difficult for us to hear you.
Sorry about that.
Go ahead. That's all right. Tony wanted to know, is it a fruit-bearing or ornamental?
It's a fruit bearing, one of the green fruit. It's one of the dwarf pear trees.
Okay. And what kind of issues are you having with it?
Well, I planted it on Mother's Day. I know typically a lot of trees you're supposed to plant in the fall time, but this one I planted it on Mother's Day, I thought I dug a real good deep hole on it and put the good Miracle-Gro mix and put a couple buckets of ashes from my fireplace in and thought I did a good job getting to try to help get it started and stake it in and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But then over the past few weeks, I noticed that all the leaves are gone on one branch, and then here another week later, all the leaves are gone on the second branch, and I feel like I'm on a downward slope, but it's going to die soon. I don't know if there's anything I should do to be able to save it.
Oh, really interesting. Let's digress and go back when you initially planted this tree. One thing I want to make sure of is that you did not plant it too deep. And when I say that, it's like when you put it into the hole that you're not taking soil up over the trunk of the tree.
That's possible. I put it slightly under an inch or two, just so that way when I put water on it, the water wouldn't simply run off.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wanted to make sure I put it under maybe an extra inch or so.
Right. That might be part of your issue here, and I'm sure that it comes into play. When you plant things too deep and you start taking soil up over the trunk, and we say this all the time, this even applies with mulch as well. What we're doing is we're putting that tree into a totally different environment than what it was accustomed to when you took it out of the pot to plant it. Now we're starting to smother it. And a lot of times I see when homeowners tell me that they've had some tree issues, the tree's about a year old, and this is especially more so with Japanese maples too. They'll tell me that the tree did rather well. Then all of a sudden, it just slowly started going on the decline. And if I stop out at their home and take a look at things, I'll notice right away that's what I'm doing. I'm pulling the soil away from around the trunk to see if that tree was planted too deep.
Okay.
You still have time. Let's not throw the towel in, but we got some other things to talk about as well. Is to pull that soil back away from the trunk and maybe lift that root ball structure up and put some soil underneath it to get it up a little higher.
Okay.
Where it's at least even with the soil surface, or maybe just ever so slightly elevated an inch or two, and then taper up with soil, but never take it up over the trunk of a tree or a shrub or anything of that sort. So that is first and foremost. Secondly, this is not just for you, but this is for anyone that's planting a tree. Stay away from soils that have fertilizers in them. Okay? A lot of times we do not want our root systems of our shrubs and our trees to come into contact with fertilizers that's still in the soil. Sometimes that can burn it. So what I'd rather see you do and everybody else that's planting a tree for the very first time is to use a couple of products that are available to the homeowner that promotes root development instead of gunning it up or goosing it up with fertilizer. And either use Fertilum's Root Stimulator. That's a great product. Fertilum's Start and Grow is a great product. Also, you can use Espoma's Biotone that contains mycorrhiza. That's a great product to use when you're planting things for the very first time. Now, the last but not least, here's something that Ernie did that you just mentioned. You put wood ashes in that hole.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
That is a no-no from the get-go.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yes. What we're doing, we're changing the whole pH level of this soil, what it's comprised of. And wood ashes are not a good thing to add to the soil. So you might want to rethink all this, lift that tree back out, okay, redo it, and it's a wait and see game. And what else I do not want you to do is fertilize it. Right now that tree is stressed. And when you plant a new tree, this is even more important as well, is we need to water our trees, especially when they're young and they're first planted, but we don't want to drown them. So a good deep drink, and then allow it to go to the dry side, a good deep drink, and you can do that rather easily just by taking your hose out there and just turning it on low for about 20 minutes. You know, just like a trickle, just where it gets into the ground, it waters it in deep and well, and just back off. So we don't need all that moisture.
Okay.
So I told you a lot of stuff right there, but yeah. There's a lot of things that have come into play.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
Wish you the best there, but don't give up on the tree. I would lift that tree back out gently and reestablish it.
I intend on doing that. While I have you here on the line, am I allowed to ask you one of the random questions I have?
Sure.
A number of years back when I was growing up, I had a bonsai tree that I took care of, and I've dabbled with them a few times over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had one die on me, I originally tried to transplant it, and one gentleman told me, he said, well, when you transplanted, did you use Japanese dirt? And at that point in time, I couldn't help but to think of just, you know, a Japanese guy laughing his tuchus off, scooping dirt into a bucket and selling it to us for a high price. Like, is there any truth behind that?
No. There's nothing any different than a soil in Japan. I mean, think about it. There's a lot of people who love the bonsai, various plants. And who can afford to fly over to Japan or send over for Japanese soil? You know, what you want with bonsai plants is this. It's very important that you get excellent drainage with the plant when you plant it into the bonsai pot itself. And there are even bonsai pots that are specifically made for that. And you'll notice those pots are very shallow in depth. And also, when you're putting that plant in there, if you notice, there's a little copper wire that will allow you to put around that root system and anchor that plant to keep it upright. And that's pretty much it, other than you shearing it and shaping it as it's growing and developing.
Uh-huh.
You just make for a really good drainage.
Okay.
And take it from, that is kind of funny, but.
But stay connected with us and let us know.
Yeah, let us know how it goes. Get back out there, take care of that tree, see if we can nurse it back. Do not do anything heroic. Do not fertilize it. It's stressed, and see what happens.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Austin. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to continue the conversation when you were talking about relocating some things in the landscape.
Okay.
Because we're right in the midst of summer, and we'll talk about it.
Okay. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking, or getting ready to talk about some moving some things. Summer, not necessarily, midsummer, not necessarily the best time to do it, but when you have to, you have to.
Oh, that's true. And I'm glad you brought that up, and kind of really interesting that I didn't even know you were going to take that whole project on.
Well, neither did I.
Oh, I got it.
It was sort of a, guess what we're doing today, honey?
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you were mentioning that you had moved some ornamental grasses. This is not the best time to move things. Mm-hmm. And one thing that you have on your side is that, you know, the temperatures haven't been too bad. You know, there are a couple of days that we were just hovering around the 90-degree mark, give or take, you know, and a little humid yesterday. But for the most part, thus far, just say a big thanks, you know, to Mother Nature. It's not been too bad, and it's been rather pleasant. So that's going to come into play in your favor. But moving things, if you're really into a project and it's necessary that you have to move something, then, in fact, you have to move it, okay, because the project still has to move on. Ideally, it's best to move some things, for the most part, late summer, when into the fall season. Mm-hmm. Less stress, temperatures are cooler and so forth, and it just makes it a little easier on the plant to withstand that change of environment.
Right.
In your situation, it's a wait and see. And did you divide those grasses when you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing because there's less plant up top that you have to take care of. And in your situation, you know, I would have done the same thing as I had. I think it was Austin that just called in about the pear tree.
Right.
You know, moving things or transplanting things to other locations, you know, I'm more apt to use those root stimulator types of products. You know, those are genetically engineered to promote root development. There's hormones in those products that encourage root development, and that's to our advantage and favor to get that plant reestablished. Mm-hmm. That's very, very important. And if you have to move something, then you have to do it. But what you need to do is follow these couple of steps. Try and spade around that shrub, that plant, or whatever it is that you're going to move, and get as much of it as possible and gently lift it. But have the area where that plant's going to get relocated to prepped and ready to go. I mean, don't dig it up and say, hey, I'm going to move it sometime this week and set it off to the side. We've all been there and we've all done that. I know you're chuckling, but I know you've done it.
Yeah, yeah, I have.
So have the area, have the site prepared.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's half of the job. That's half of the work. So the sooner you can lift it, place it back into its new location, its new home, plant it at the same level that you lifted it out of where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And still, again, I'm going to put a lot of emphasis on this. Do not plant too deep.
Okay.
When you plant too deep, it's a slow death.
Sure.
And it doesn't happen overnight. What happens is it starts to smother the plant, and it just slowly starts to, you know, suffocate.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it starts dropping leaves, and it just isn't happy. And that's just not the situation you want to put your plant in when you're planting something new or if you're relocating a plant that's existing.
Right. Now, that does that necessarily applied just to the ornamental grasses, because there were some lilies that came out also.
Yeah, lilies too. You know, you're separating those, and it's not a bad idea to separate lilies. Were they day lilies?
Night
lilies, summer lilies.
They were mid-afternoon lilies when I got to
them. Know, again, I'm not sure the type of lily. If they were day lilies, you know, they're pretty resilient. They bounce back, you know, usually give them a haircut. Sometimes they start looking ratty in the summer. You get a little bit of rust on the foliage and so forth. You know, lilies, you know, they're pretty tough.
They must be day lilies because that's what Lisa said.
Okay.
You can't kill those things.
Well, she knows. She knows. Good thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was talking with somebody yesterday, Lucy Rothfuss, and we were talking about relocating some things, and she had just recently moved some butterfly weed. And relatively young, I think it was only in its space, if I'm not mistaken, when she was describing it to me, maybe a year. And I was like, ooh, you know, there's something about butterfly weed that I was trying to remember. But butterfly weed's a little different. It has somewhat of a taproot. So you need to make sure that you get all of that and that you don't sever that.
Right.
That could be its demise. But she had gone ahead and you know, relocated her butterfly weed. And I think she did it a few weeks ago or so, maybe a little longer, and she said it was still performing rather well. So that's good to know. But really the key is getting as much as that root structure up that you possibly can. That's where it really comes into play.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Pretty much in the middle of the summer already. It just seems like we talk about this a lot every year, how we want to be prepared, how to be prepared and get ready for the season. And then in the blink of an eye, the season is almost halfway finished, halfway over.
Yeah.
July is come and gone.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
You know, we were off last week and just coming off of that week, and you're right now in the middle of July, and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be right into August, and we're going to be looking forward towards the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about this area. We do have seasons.
Yeah.
You know, we could be out there in the Phoenix area basking in the sun, and I don't care if they say, oh, it's low humidity. Still 120 degrees is hot.
Yeah.
That's not pleasant. I don't know. So however you want to slice and dice it, it might be nice out there in the winter, but...
Plenty of ways to stay connected with us. Jump onto our Facebook page. You can also email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
You know, what's been chewing on our leaves?
Mm.
And what do we need to think about? And what do we need to look forward to doing, maybe, if it's necessary?
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. It's kind of interesting when it does, when the 4th of July falls in the middle of the week. It sort of throws everyone off. You either take the first half of the week off and then come right back to work on the 5th, or you take the second half of the week off and go on holiday right at the 4th. So I just sort of struck a medium there and took the whole week off.
That was a good idea. I'm with you. My week's kind of been messed up. You know, it's like, what day is it?
Yeah. So, honestly.
Really, it's a fact. It's like, what day is it? So it just kind of throws things off.
But mm-hmm.
you can't determine when the 4th's going to fall.
No. Nope. You just got to keep an eye on the calendar.
Which is not a bad gig. Think about it. Now, if you had one of those weekends, or if you're one of those people that are off every Saturday and Sunday, I don't know what that's like anymore. And then you take off Monday as a vacation day. That gives you a 4-day weekend.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad gig when it's in the middle of the week.
Nope.
If you look at it like that.
Yeah. I still kind of just snarl a little bit when I hear everybody go, it's Friday. Isn't that great? And I'm thinking, yeah, it's going to be wonderful when my alarm clock goes off at 4 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Yeah. It is great, but it's not great.
No.
I forgot what it's like to be off on a Saturday and Sunday.
Where is that?
Yeah. Oh.
But it's going to be a great day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. And, you know, we were talking about this not long ago, Tony. It's going to be nice because some of the farmer markets are starting to show up with some great crops.
I've already been there.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
And what was the first thing you picked up?
Some green beans, tomatoes.
Yeah.
Which I've already picked two tomatoes, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm. And actually, I had one before the 4th of July, which was the tomato I'm talking about. It's a celebrity.
Uh-huh.
Love that tomato. It's one of my favorites.
Really?
Oh.
Now, what's different about that? Is it juicier?
Oh, yeah. It's got I like the pulp. I'm not one of those tomato aficionados that like it really thick and meaty.
Uh-huh.
You know, you got to have some pulp because when you put it on a sandwich with mayo, it just gets juicy, all that good stuff. Hey, you're out there. You know what I'm talking about. Not everyone's like you, Ernie. There are some people that like condiments.
I'm not a condiment guy. I don't think it.
So, like, when you eat a hot dog or a brat or a mitt, it's just plain?
Put some cheese on it.
Oh, wow. You over the top, Ernie. I like it. You try things.
Live in the wild.
You're experimental. I like it. You're killing me.
But it was great when our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats were in the other day and gave us that little gift package.
Oh, I've already been tearing into it.
Mine's pretty much gone.
Mine, well, I'll tell you what, that was a great size box. And thank you,
Paul.
Oh, it was Paul Rice and David Kegley brought us in this great treat box from Bluegrass Quality Meats. Uh-huh. And it was. I think what I have left is still the cottage butt and the ham. Everything else is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of grilling there, brother.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And Paul hit the nail on the head. You know, I was talking about different relishes and so forth on top of a med or a brat. He's like, what about good old sauerkraut? Well, yeah, he's right.
Yeah,
I did do that, yeah. Exactly. And I kept thinking about Lisa's sauerkraut.
Oh, yeah.
How delicious that is. And when it's homemade and it ferments and it's, you know, which is really healthy for you, by the way.
It is. It is.
So the probiotics movement is really big. And a lot of people are looking for those fermented items that, mm-hmm. You know, are very beneficial for our digestive tract.
Couldn't agree more. And I promise that I will bring you some of her sauerkraut in.
I remember the day you surprised me with that.
Yeah.
And I did return the jar, by the way.
Yes, you did.
Yes,
so that's
very important.
Qualifies you to get some more. But we're excited about that. And if you know of a great little farmer's market somewhere around, give us a call at 749-B105. Let us know where it is, and we'll pass that on. There is nothing better than shopping local and supporting the local gardens and farmers and
big
eating
time.
Local.
That's big time. I agree with you. Where I was over at the little market at Lunkin Airport.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's a good market. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good markets out there. I wish more people would hone in and point those out to us because, you know, it's just when you're supporting local growers and farmers and so forth, it doesn't get any better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Farm to table.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff. You know, I was going to tell you before we went into the break that I did want to touch on something. A lot of people are coming into the store, when I say that, the garden center, and it's like, hey, what's been chewing on my leaves? And if you've noticed recently or the past couple of weeks, some more than others have had some really major issues with Japanese beetles.
Hey, I mentioned that earlier when we were talking off the air. I hadn't really given that much thought at all, but I guess that's still an issue.
I find it very, very interesting. Now, when we first moved into our neighborhood 20, 25 years ago, you know, it was a new street, a lot of development, and a lot of things were disturbed, et cetera. We used to have Japanese beetles so bad, and they loved my larch, you know, my Larix tree, my weeping larch. They would just chew the heck out of it, and amongst other things, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had some trees in the nursery. We had some beautiful Himalayan birch trees. And, you know, I would just go out there and look up in the tips, and I'd have to spray some things. But, boy, they would just gather up air and just have fun and, you know, pick out girlfriends or mates and just say, hey, we're going to go at it. And while we're here having this party, we're going to chew on the leaves. But I don't understand the resurgence with the Japanese beetle in certain areas.
Sure.
It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to keep them off of your shrubs and your trees and your plants and so forth. But you can do it with some, you know, positive effect. But for the most part, it's difficult to control. And we talk a lot about the Fertilume systemic drench for trees and shrubs. And that is one of the products that is effective for Japanese beetles. And, you know, there's some homeowners that will tell me, I did use that, but I'm still having the issue. Well, this is the problem. Think about it. If you're a Japanese beetle and you go flying into Ernie's yard over there in Villa Hills,
mm-hmm.
chew on a couple of your plants, well, you're going to ingest that foliage that's being protected with the drench, but that doesn't prohibit that Japanese beetle to fly off two or three or four or five doors down the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you never see that Japanese beetle drop, but you see the initial biting or two of the foliage, right?
Right, right.
And if that keeps continuing, you know, you'll still have a little bit of Japanese beetle damage. But don't fret it. You know, it's not always doom and gloom because, you know, a lot of times, you know, our shrubs, our trees, they might look a little unsightly. However, the next season, they bounce back rather well.
Gotcha.
You know, so don't worry about it too much. And a lot of times, you know, our trees, they're of size, our shrubs, makes it a little difficult to spray. But there's some products out there that you can use
mm-hmm.
to spray for them. And, you know, it does have a positive effect to a degree, but don't fret it. You know, that's all I want to point out. You know, it's just Mother Nature, but for whatever reason, some areas are more, you know, afflicted with Japanese beetle activity than others, and I can't explain why.
Right. And our plants are resilient. They can take a little bit, but we've got to help them when we
take
can.
A little licking, you know, take it on the chin, right?
That's right. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
And since we've been talking about the Japanese beetle, what do they do? Well, Mama Beetle, she likes to lay her eggs and it's still not too late to put down any type of grub control. So that might be beneficial for you and your lawn later this fall.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking a little bit about the Japanese beetle, but there are other pests that could be lurking.
Well, as a result of the Japanese beetle, and it's not always just the Japanese beetle. You have the mask chafer, the June beetle. These guys, the females, and especially when you get decent rainfalls and so forth, when the females lay her eggs, which she's been doing, it makes it easier for her to penetrate the soil surface mm-hmm. and lay eggs easily. And in about 14 days, those eggs start to hatch. So now we have the larva from the Japanese beetle underneath the soil surface. And as they start to grow and develop, they start feeding on our root systems of our lawns. And it used to not, years ago, you didn't see a lot of damage from grubs.
No.
And in recent years, I've seen quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because a couple of years ago, we've had some decent rainfalls during the summer months. And again, that makes it easier for the female to lay eggs. So everything kind of just snowballs from there. And I still think that there's plenty of time to get down some grub control products, but you need to get those watered in well and thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is these are systemic products. They get into the turf itself. And when those grubs start to feed on your lawn roots, the turf's root system, they die. So you're going to save yourself a lot of headache. And 9 times out of 10, when people start figuring it out that I'm having grub issues in the lawn, they don't figure this out until late September. Okay? And mm-hmm. at that point in time, that's when the turf is really thin. It pulls up real easily. You can almost just roll it back. And then you'll see the grub activity underneath. At that point in time, you're like, I need to do something. So you're taking a curative approach. And at that point in time, if you want to kill grubs, it's going to have to be done quickly. And it's going to be done with a product that has Dilox in it. So that kills them rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point in time, you know, it's a little late. And when I say it's a little late, you know, we're starting to push the envelope when it's best to sow grass seed or to replace those areas or
sure.
repair those areas yeah. that have been damaged. So right now, I think, and I'm confident, you can still be effective in controlling grub issues by using High Yields Grub Free Zone 3. Okay? You might also find High Yields Grub Free Zone 2. 2 or 3, it doesn't matter. And you're only going to find this product at your local garden centers and nurseries. And it's a great product. You need to get it watered in. It is a systemic, and the root system and the turf's going to take it in, and it's going to protect it against damage against grubs.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. You know, when you were talking about September being a little late in the game, when you notice that or you think you might have issues, that's when you should be prepping for the upcoming year. So if you don't, I guess, maybe
right.
do a little inspection now to get ahead of the game, you're really sort of defeating the purpose there.
Usually if you peel up an area, like a one-foot square area, and you have several grubs, then you have a grub issue.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when you're digging in the lawn or in the yard or in the landscape beds, and, we all have grubs to a degree. And also, you know, the grubs, they lead to some issues with moles.
Right.
And also, you know, moles, keep in mind, it doesn't mean you have a grub problem. If you have mole issues, does not mean you have a grub problem. It could also mean that, you know, your soil is very healthy and you have earthworms or night crawlers in there. So that doesn't mean that you have grubs. You know, it's just when you're digging in the landscape and you notice a lot of grubs, maybe more than normal, then you might want to consider using some of the grub control products. Now, there's also a biological way to get rid of grubs, and that is a product out there called Milky Spore. What I've read about Milky Spore, you know, it takes a couple of seasons, 2 or 3 seasons, to really for it to take effect. However, from what I've read, university studies have indicated it's really not all that effective. So if you're looking to control it in that fashion, mm-hmm. you might want to get a little bit more information or do a little bit more research. But I do know this for a fact, that grub-free zone from High Yield is an excellent product, and I have a friend over in Campbell County that says it works wonderfully. So if you want to protect your lawn and you've noticed if you've had a lot of Japanese beetle issues, rest assured she's been laying her eggs here recently, and it doesn't take long for those to hatch. It's right. About 14 days.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you take the time to jump on to our Facebook page. It's a great way to stay connected with us. You can post pictures and pose questions, and we'll get back with you about that. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
You know what? I want to get into performance. You know, and in particular, I'm going to talk about how are your annuals, and I'm going to tell you how ours are performing, you know, with this nice weather that we've had. Let's talk about a little bit of annual performance, and maybe even some perennial performance, and some things that we can do to keep things looking really, really nice as we progress through the summer months.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we want to remind you that our friend Jason from Herman Services is going to be joining us at 8 o'clock. You know, a lot to talk to him about. But it is the weekend after the 4th of July, kind of like the middle of the season for us. But plenty of great product at your locally owned, independently operated garden center, and plenty of time to still get out and plant.
Absolutely. And, you know, the summer isn't over.
No.
Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries throughout. You're going to find some very nice nursery stock, some beautiful annuals, especially perennials. Right now, perennials are, man, they're in their glory. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're blooming. If you check out our Facebook page, and our perennial plant of the week is the echinacea, which we're going to talk about here just shortly as we progress throughout the show this morning. But check out our Facebook page. I posted some beautiful, beautiful photos of some echinaceas, and you can just see some of the insect activity. They attract a lot of pollinators. So there's a lot of these products, you know, that are still available. They're fresh. They're in their glory. They're in full bloom. And you're going to find these at your local garden centers and nurseries. Todd Baton, it was Steve Lowe down at Baton's posted. He showed one of the monarchs just perched up on one of the echinacea
blooms. Oh, really?
Yeah. What I posted, you know, I noticed yesterday when I was taking these photographs, there were some honeybees that were on the echinacea blooms. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just your typical bumblebee. These were honeybees. So somebody that told me, somebody close by, you know, has a beehive. And these guys are out there. They're busy. They're doing what they want. And that's why we want to be very cautious about when we're using chemicals, insecticides and herbicides and all that other stuff. We do not want to harm our pollinators.
Mm-mm.
But right now, annuals are really rocking and are rolling, and I think that has a lot to do with some of the weather that we've been experiencing. We've had some timely rainfalls. Hopefully, you've been watering when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But, Ernie, on our deck, some of the pots that Tina has worked up and planted up, they're looking really nice, and there's a plant that, bar none, second to none, is a top, top performer, especially in full sun and a lot of heat, and that's lantana.
Lantana.
Gosh.
Mm.
You talk about a hummingbird attractor, too. We were just out on the deck the other day, and when we were grilling, you know, some of those really good, tasty treats that we got from our friends at Bluegrass Quality Meats, yes. We were just out there, and we would just stand still, and here come the hummers, and they're all over the lantana. You can't beat the performance of the lantana.
Right.
It's stellar.
I just, you mentioned about Baton's Nursery and Greenhouse. I just clicked onto their Facebook page to see that beautiful monarch. And there's nothing more gracious than a beautiful butterfly like that.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of perennials, too, and the bloom head on the echinaceas. There's so many benefits to our pollinating plants. It connects you to nature.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Jane on the line from Dayton who's got a yellow rose bush question for you.
Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. I will have a question. Tony, if you remember the yellow rose bush that I got over there at Jackson's.
Yeah, was that David Austin, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe that's what it was.
Yeah.
But anyway, we brought it home. We also got the bag of, I guess it was starter, Fertiloom starter that we put in there. Anyway, we planted it, put the stuff in the hole with it and everything, and it's looking beautiful. It's starting to grow. It's got yellow rosebuds on it. But I've got a couple of leaves that are turning yellow with the brown spots. Should I use the drench on that?
No, that's really not a drench issue. Drench is going to be more beneficial from an insecticidal approach.
Okay.
Where you're combating, like, the row slug and so forth.
Okay, but we didn't put the drench down. Should we go ahead and do that?
It was a few weeks ago. You can. I would use it. You have to be careful because when plants are new, and I will tell you this, you cannot use those drench products in containers or in the nursery. I know for a fact. It will burn the plant.
Right.
And you don't want to use too much because that plant still yet to really get rooted out well enough.
Right, right.
So I would use it kind of like at half strength based on the size of it.
Okay. But what about the yellow leaves? What should
I
do for that?
Usually that tells me it's lacking some nutrients. And keep in mind, rose bushes, they are heavy feeders as we progress throughout the summer months.
Okay, so I need to use...
just use a fertilizer that's...
I also got a bag of the rose and flower...
Systemic from Fertilum?
Yes.
Yeah, use that. That's perfect. That's okay. Giving you that insect protection, too. And I like the fact that you're using that because it's granular.
Mm-hmm.
So what it's doing, it's every time you water or when it rains, it's slowly doing its job.
Okay.
So stay that course. Next year, that's going to be a totally different rose bush. Now, you have, the David Austin roses, they're spectacular. And they have those gorgeous blooms. They have that old-fashioned rose look.
And smell good.
Oh, the fragrance is unbeatable.
Yeah.
Now, in your situation, when we talk about specialty roses like that versus the knockout that everybody's so commonly familiar with.
Right.
The knockout is a wild rose. So, therefore, it's able to hold its own when it comes to disease issues.
Right.
Some of the other rose bushes, we got to make sure that they get adequate air movement around them and that they're not planted in confined, tight spaces.
Yeah, and it's not. It has plenty of room around it. And the bulb, I didn't put it under the ground. It's up, above the ground. And I keep watering around the base of it, so it is soaked down in there good.
And you don't need to keep it overly wet, okay? A lot of times that will bring on that chlorotic look with the foliage. It'll turn yellow rather quickly, and you'll get a lot of leaf drop.
Okay.
So a good drink, then back off, let it go a little bit to the dry side. Rose bushes are pretty resilient, but keep good air movement in that rose bush. That's why it's important to keep them pruned down on the inside, and do not overhead irrigate. If you can keep from it. And stay the course with it, Jane.
I will. It was looking really, really good. And then I saw a couple of those yellow leaves, and I'm like, oh, my God, what's going on?
Don't fret it. Everything will be fine.
Okay, the next question. My mums that grew like 3 foot tall, I've been keeping them trimmed back. Cut back, and I cut them back just a couple days ago, really, really low. From last year, I believe you guys said the last time to cut them back would be around July 4th.
Right. That's exactly right. And I'm glad you brought that up. I would have totally forgotten about that. That's what this program's about. That's the last time you want to pinch back or cut back your mums as they're progressing throughout the summer, the spring and summer.
Right.
And you're setting up that bloom production for the fall.
Okay.
Perfect. All right. And thanks for that pointer. I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right,
thanks.
Jane. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Bye. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Get Jane all straightened out.
Yeah. Jane's an avid gardener now.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, she likes her plants. That's for sure. And we're still going to talk about plants. We need to take a quick break. Is that right?
Nope,
we're good. Okay. I thought you were signaling me there. I wasn't sure. But, we're talking about annuals, and I want to hear how your annuals are performing. And in doing that, we're also getting that message out to our listening audience, maybe some plants that they've yet to try.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people will just, they do the old, same old stuff.
Yeah,
every year.
I was
they
just
buy
about
the same,
to say, they and, get confident and comfortable and that my mom always got those plants right there.
Right. So don't be afraid to mix it up. Don't be afraid to step out of the box and try something different.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of something different, the other day, Tina and I went up and had a enjoyed a cold one at the pub at the Crestview Hills Mall.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever planted the coleus out there in the islands is stunning.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you want something that captures your attention right away. I'm driving and I'm wanting to look at these. Okay. I need to pay attention to traffic flow.
Yeah.
But there was a deep red coleus in a center, and it stood about 2.5 feet, give or take. And in front of it was, they were begonias, a pink begonia with that deep red background. And in front of it, the begonias, now these are tiered, you know, you're getting some depth, you're getting some layering here.
Mm-hmm.
In front of that was a, like, chartreuse-colored Orthoanthera. And you talk about stunning. And if anyone has seen that, just keep that in mind. That's what planting annuals is all about. Whoever did that, came up with that look,
did a good job,
should be commended, because it will capture your attention, and it's a beautiful look, and they're performing, it's top notch.
Right. So you can take, when you see something like that, maybe snap a quick photo on your phone and then think, where can I recreate that in my garden?
What I want you to do is take a photo of that, and then next year when you change up your bed or you look to do something different, you take that into your local home and garden center or nursery, and you say, hey, I'm looking for something similar to this. I want to mimic this.
Right.
And, you know, this is really, as we progress through the summer months and we're talking about annuals and performance, another favorite of mine is Scaevola. I think that annual gets totally overlooked, and it deserves more merit than what we give it. And it kind of billows out, beautiful blue bloom to it. Mm-hmm. And there's a white one, and there's also like a light pink. But that blue is stunning. When you mix that with other various colors in a container, it rocks. Great plant. I wish you knew what the Scaevola was. You don't know what that is, do you?
I know, but I'm
trying to get excited here.
I know, I can see that.
I'm trying to get excited when we talk about plants. You know, and going back to the coleus, they make a statement. And here's a perfect example. You know, I love blooms, don't get me wrong, but the coleus, you know, we're talking about this coleus at the Crestview Hills Mall. You know, you're getting color with foliage. And I can't say it any better. I don't think you can get as much color with foliage than you can with coleus without having, you know, to deadhead and take care of all these blooms.
Right.
So it gives you that bold, sharp look and from a color standpoint, and you can't beat coleus. And I'll tell you another coleus that I really like a lot and is a great performer too, especially in the shade, are the Kong coleus. Big leaves, make a bold statement, give you just a great in-depth look in a shady spot.
Uh-huh.
The leaves sometimes can get as large as some hosta leaves.
Wow.
It's something you got to have in a shade garden, I'm telling you.
Hmm.
And right now, you know, this is why annuals are popular, is because we get this color all throughout the season, as long as we can take care of our annuals.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas perennials, okay, they bloom at various times, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I love perennials too; they got a role.
Sure,
but annuals do as well. And taking care of them is rather easy as we progress throughout the summer months. And if something's ever ratty, don't be afraid to give it a haircut. Okay?
Sure.
You don't need to take it to a beauty salon. All you need to do is get in your drawer, get out your pruners, get out some scissors, and just take care of it.
Sure.
And then come back and fertilize. You know, a lot of the plants that we buy today in the garden centers, I say this often, they're junkies. And I mean that in a good way, okay? We don't have to worry about these plants driving out on the roads and so forth, or us being in harm. But they're good junkies.
Sure.
And we need to keep the food pumping to them.
Right.
You know, especially our million bells, our petunias and so forth. They require a lot of fertilization. And they also like iron.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I really, really like Jack's Classic for petunias.
Okay.
Great product.
I think what you're trying to say there is that the plants that we purchase at our local garden center are accustomed to a level of care.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the good stuff, and then when you buy them and bring them home, they expect that same kind of care.
Absolutely.
You know, they're hoping
we have to continue that momentum
right.
to keep those plants really looking at their best.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not hard to do. You know, a perfect example, too, the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens, they do a wonderful job up there. You want to get a great representation of various annuals, and they also, they post their top performers on their website. So if you really want to know mm-hmm. how well an annual is going to perform in our area, that's the place to go. That's the resource to look for. And in addition to listening to us every Saturday, because we're going to tell you about them. But, you know, the beauty of what Steve Foltz and his staff does at the Cincinnati Zoo is this, Ernie. They don't just test a plant one year and then come up with an assessment and say, hey, this is it. This is what you want or don't want. They'll plant those at various locations throughout the botanical gardens, and they'll trial those plants for 3 years on average,
yeah.
give or take.
Right.
And they have their top performers. And I love annuals because they give us color.
Sure. And that's beautiful. That's one of those things where you get a chance to add some color and depth and character, the whole nine yards.
Absolutely. And another fertilizer I want to point out, if you're having some issues with some blooming production, it's not quite there, and you're getting plenty of sun comes into play, but Fertilooms, blooming and rooting, water-soluble plant food is another great product because it has a higher middle number. It has more phosphorus in it, and phosphorus is what really gives us some of that bloom production. So you can look for that as well at your local garden centers and nurseries. The blooming and rooting from Fertiloom, it's a 9.58.8 analysis, that middle number, is what's going to give you some stellar blooms, provided you're getting plenty of sun and you're deadheading.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. You do need to pause for a moment now, and when we come back,
we're going to jump in with both feet, the plant of the week.
Plant of the week. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and our plant of the week this week is
the echinacea, the coneflower. Echinacea. That's the one that you were just talking about that Steve Lowe from down at Baton's had yes. posted on our Facebook, and
yeah.
the monarchs on it. A wonderful, wonderful pollinator to have in the garden. And right now, if you check out our Facebook page, I mean, you can see what we just got in the nursery and other nurseries here locally throughout the tri-state area and garden centers. This is where perennials are in their glory. You know, they're showing an abundance of color
uh-huh.
and are doing their job. You can see where, you know, there's some insects on them. And that's what, that's the purpose, you know, to draw the insects in. And the echinacea, the coneflower, a.k.a. coneflower, it's been a wonderful staple in the garden for, you know, many years. The original, one of the earlier versions, Magnus, that everybody's so familiar with, has been a top performer. And a lot of breeders in the industry have brought to us a number of different varieties, and we're going to touch base on those in a second. But, you know, in addition to its importance in the garden, there's also some health benefits as well for us, you know, that for us humans, from the standpoint that the echinacea is used as an herb to help us with different ailments.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, really, really interesting. And I was on a website the other day, and I was this information I thought it was really, really interesting from the University of Maryland Medical Center. And, you know, we know that the echinacea is one of the most popular herbs today, and it has been for a number of years. But the Native Americans, they used the echinacea plant in a medicinal way. And they found, archaeologists, and I don't know how they do all this stuff, that Native Americans have been using echinacea for years, hundreds of years, to treat infections and wounds and for a lot of other just general purposes.
Really?
Yeah, so the Native Americans had found out that there was some benefit to the echinacea plant itself for healing properties. And throughout history, according to this medical information and research, you know, echinacea has been used to treat scarlet fever, malaria, blood poisoning, diphtheria. Wow. So there's a lot of interesting things here that it comes into play. So not only is it an important pollinator for our insects and so forth, but also for us humans. You know, there's a lot of medical benefit here. And apparently, this was interesting, too. when the introduction of antibiotics came into play years ago, it seemed at that point in time in the United States that less emphasis was being used on research with echinacea, and a lot of it was being done over in Germany. So the Germans had continued the research and so forth. And today, echinacea is used to shorten the duration of the common cold and flu. Now, I know you've heard that.
I have.
So it's supposed to be very, very beneficial from that standpoint. And it also reduces the some of the ailments and symptoms that we get from the common cold and flu. And, you know, like the sore throat, cough, fever, things like that. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of times, I think there's even cough drops out there that say it has echinacea in it. You ever seen that? Where it's good for sore throats?
Yeah.
So there's a huge benefit to the echinacea. So I just thought that was really, really interesting information, to say the least. But it's a wonderful plant. Check it out on our Facebook page. And you can just see the vibrant colors that are out there and available to the homeowner today. And, I mean, there's so many different colors to choose from. And I will say this. One of my favorite series, and we're going to talk about a few series of the coneflower, the echinacea, is the sombrero series. And,
I'm sorry, it's just a funny name.
You think that's funny?
I love sombrero.
Hey, isn't there a taco festival going on tonight?
I hope so.
I don't know. Since we just said, I think that.
Yeah.
Yatman's Cove. There you go. That might be it. Hey,
si,
get
senor.
Your sombrero out. There you go. Little.
And perfect weather for that.
It is. It's quite awesome. But, you know, when it comes to the echinacea and its culture, it's an easy plant to grow. It really is. It likes it on the dry side. Mm-hmm. You know, and occasionally, you have to give a little bit of moisture, a little bit of water. We need to look after our plants. And this is really, really important. When you plant it, you need to find an area where you get at least 6 hours of sun.
Oh, yeah.
All right. If you have a shade garden, it's not going to pan out for you.
Right.
When you look at shade plants. But we also need well-drained soil.
I think these are going to be perfect for the hill.
They could be because, that water runs off. It doesn't stay wet.
Right.
They do not like wet feet. They do not want to be over water. They do not want to be in an area that stays wet throughout the winter months.
And lots of sun.
Lots of sun. Yeah. At least 6 hours to get great bloom production.
Mm-hmm.
The plant's very adaptable. It's very tolerant of heat. Loves the humidity. Can tolerate drought once it's established.
Uh-huh.
And, it doesn't want really... It doesn't want high fertile soils. When I say that, I'm talking about, soils that we fertilize all the time.
Right.
They're not that picky. And they just give us this abundance of color. And, if they get a little overcrowded, you can divide those about every 3 or 4 years. Give some to your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Take them to a local community plant swap, anything of the sort. A lot of times, you'll notice that some of them will reseed more so than others. So that will occur as well. As far as usage, like where would you plant the coneflower? You can make attractive borders with it.
Right.
But plant them in a grouping. When you plant them in a grouping, they make more of an impact. They really do. And, and try to keep the colors coordinated. And we're going to talk about colors because there's one that's very, very interesting that gives us a multitude of colors. But, just... What I want you to know, and I'm going to put more emphasis on this, do not overwater coneflowers.
Yeah.
Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. The coneflowers, they're blooming their heads off right now. A wonderful addition to the landscape. Or if you're trying to attract wildlife to the backyard or pollinators, this is one of the best ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed I've been clicking through the pictures, listening to you talk and describe them. And there are bees and butterflies both on these, so that's going to be a great addition to your landscape and great for the pollinators, as you mentioned, and the butterflies.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I'm going to throw this out there for a $20 gift card to Jackson Florist. Whoever can tell us what the word echinose means. It has something to do with echinacea, obviously. Echinose. Okay. For a $20 gift card. But... Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and just look at the beautiful blooms that this plant gives us. And there are so many different benefits. And now, when we're talking about some of the medicinal elements or benefits to the echinacea, it's not coming from some of the newer hybrid varieties. It's some of the older Angus Folia varieties, okay? Yeah, yeah. But the plant has many, many benefits. When we come back, I'm going to tell you some of my favorites and some of those I want you to look for at the Garden Center.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking about our plant of the week, the echinaceas, and was clicking through the pictures you posted on our Facebook page, Tony, and I noticed the difference. Some of them, the petals of the flower seem downturned, where the cone is the dominant part of the plant.
Right.
And then when you get to the orange one, it seems to have a smaller one with more petals outright.
They're all different.
Uh-huh. I like the orange one.
You know, I do too. And I'll tell you why in a second. But, you know, a moment ago, I was talking about the Sombrero series. Uh-huh. And the reason why the Sombrero series resonates with me is because, in my opinion, my experience is that it's very, very reliable. In relation to some of the other newer varieties that you hear about often, a lot of times, you know, testing plants, and that's what's great about the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens, are always testing plants. But the Sombrero series has really been an outstanding performer. And Salsa Red, love it, love it, love it. You want to, you know, if you're looking for outstanding red in a bloom, this is one that's definitely worth considering. There's no doubt about it. Their blooms are almost like a spicy red, and they just show off, Ernie, all summer long. They bloom, the echinaceas, the coneflowers that we're talking about, aka coneflower, you know, they give us an abundance of blooms from summer, midsummer on until the fall season. And you can't beat it.
No.
Another one that we just got in the nursery the other day is Sombrero Baja Burgundy. Now, like the Sombrero Salsa Red, Baja Burgundy, they'll get about 2.5 feet in height, full sun again, and the burgundy color in Baja Burgundy is nothing short of striking. It's rich. It's a rich color, and it's very attractive. And in a mass planting, it's awesome. It just stands out. You know, when you do those drifts, when you plant in drifts with the same color, very, very appealing. And there's another one, too, that you were just talking about a moment ago, the orange that we have on the Facebook page.
Right.
That's Adobe Orange. That too, is in the Sombrero family. A little shorter, and you said you noticed that the foliage on it's a little different, and it is. It gets about 18 to 20 inches in height, give or take. And kind of like you, I'm a little biased. You know, I like orange, and that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
To me, it just stands out. Bright, bright, and showy. That's Adobe Orange. Lemon Yellow is another variety in the Sombrero series. It's a little taller than the Adobe Orange, 24 to 26 inches, 2 foot, 2.5. A striking yellow, however, not quite as bright as the sun, Ernie. A close second. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's another nice one as well. Also, in the grand scheme of things, we're just talking about the Sombrero series. There's also the Pow Wow series. Pow Wow. We're talking about echinaceas. We're talking about coneflowers.
Right.
The Pow Wow series. And this one's for you, brother. Wild Berry. Pow Wow Wild Berry. Gets about 20, 24 inches in height. And Ernie, I know you like pink.
I do.
You know, I remember you took ballet, so. This would be a good color choice for you, brother.
Okay.
You can snip a bloom, and you can wear it in your pretty long hair.
How about that?
There you go. Yeah. What do you think?
I'm
awesome shade of
that.
Pink. So I think that's you.
That's me.
Yeah. Pow Wow Wild Berry.
And it go great with the orange.
No. You might not see those two color combinations together in contrast.
I don't.
I have no idea. You know, and I don't want to forget about white echinaceas either. You know, Pow Wow White is very stunning. If you're looking for something white in the garden, this is an excellent choice. It's a pure, pure white bloom. The petals are anchored with this attractive gold cone, and it makes it a standout. You can see that. It's even on our Facebook page. You can just see that cone and those spines in it. That gold color makes those white petal blooms look awesome. Just stand out tremendously. Love it, love it, love it. What do you think about it? Did you see that one?
I did. To make sure that you jump onto our Facebook page and check out some of these beautiful plants. I've got a couple of that we were talking about the hill and flooding that with plants. This is going to be an ideal one to add a couple of things.
I think so. It'd be a really good one for you out there in the Villa Hills area, Ernie, on that big mountain yours in the back. Yeah. The one you talk about often.
Yeah.
You know, but last but not least, I like this name, and, you know, what's funny, a lot of times people ask me, where do they come up with these names? I really don't know. You know, I don't know if it's a group of people who sit down at a round table and say, hey, this is what we want to call it. But there is a double scoop series when it comes to the coneflower. And when I say double scoop, these are blooms that they're large double flowers. And there's one called double scoop raspberry, just to name one. There's cranberry, but very different. And it doesn't have the spiny cone at the center of it like the other typical echinaceas do.
Yeah.
It has a bloom on top of the bloom petals. You know how you were talking about how the bloom petals go downward?
Yeah.
But the double scoop series gives you a totally different bloom look. And look for these guys at your local garden centers and nurseries. That's where you're going to find the best selection. I'm telling you right now, support your local garden centers and nurseries. And, you know, if you're on the south side of the river, here's where you're going to find some really nice-looking perennial plants, echinaceas, the one in particular that we're talking about today. And Maddox Garden Center, if you're out there in the Florence area. If you're also out there in the Union area, see our friends at Baton's Nurseries. We, of course, have echinaceas on hand at Jackson Florist and Garden Center. And over on the east side of town, Barge Nursery, I'm sure they have plenty of echinaceas out there in beautiful bloom. Also, Burger Farms. You know, this is right now, we're still seeing where perennials are in their heyday. They're in their glory. They're showing a lot of color, and you get the best representation of what it looks like and what to expect in the garden. On the north side of town, see our good friend Jim at Lakeview Nursery. A lot of unusual things up there. Mm-hmm. Jim's got a beautiful garden center. And we can't forget about our good friend Ed at Ed's Feed and Seed. Another great place to visit, especially if you like to feed the birds. But Ed carries a lot of various plants, annuals and perennials and so forth, and shrubs. On the west side, I haven't talked to my old buddy Clem in a while at Schwab Nursery, but definitely stop over there and see the folks at Schwab. I believe Mitzi's still there taking care of things along with Danny, so stop over there. And also Lohman Greenhouses over there in the Harrison area.
Mm.
So these are the garden centers that are our local leaders here in the Cincinnati area. I want you to support these guys, and this is where you're going to find the best-looking product.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. Coming up at 8 o'clock, our friend Jason from Herman Services is going to be joining us. But when we come back...
You know, I want to touch on something. A little thorn in my side, and I know better than... I preach it all the time, how to deter deer. And I need to take heed to some of my own advice. But what plants would deers... Will the deer eat when it comes to our vegetable gardens? And what will they leave alone? Let's touch base on that, Ernie.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony mentioned before we went into the break about deer. And we see a lot of deer out at our house. And just the other day, I was telling Tony, went out to fill the bird feeders. And luckily... just happened to look down, or I would have stepped in a big pile of deer droppings, and it was evidence that they came to the feeders and, you know, nudged them to get to some seeds, some sunflower seeds. We also have some corn out there for the squirrels, and they had just tore it up.
You got to put the ED on it. It was all tore up.
They just plowed through the corn, so apparently they were hungry. And if they're coming into your landscape bed, what are they going to nibble on if it's not the seeds?
Well, this is all resonated from Tia and I were having a discussion the other day, and she's like, I don't know why you always try to grow tomato plants down there, because you know the deer always get into them. And I'm not always up on my game and using some of the deer products, but once deer get accustomed to stopping in your yard and feasting on whatever it is that's growing in your landscape,
mm-hmm.
it's like you or I having our favorite coffee stop on the way into work every morning, okay? So we got to change that pattern.
Right.
But no sooner than she had said that to me the other day, I looked down off the deck, and I look, and I have tomato cages around. I'm using like that road mesh.
Sure.
I mean, there's hoof marks in my raised bed, and it's like, this dude just topped them. I looked at Tina, I said, did you bring them in the yard last night? Did you do this on purpose? You know, she's always giving me a hard time about tomato plants.
Mm-hmm.
And she just shook her head, and I was like, you know, this is really aggravating. And, you know, I talk about deer products that I know that work, and sometimes you think I would take heed to my own advice. But Deer Scram's a great product to use. I love Deer Scram. I should have been using Deer Scram. That's all I can say.
Is that right?
And it's guaranteed. You know, when you buy it,
yeah.
from a homeowner standpoint, it's a win-win-win situation for you all the way around. You know, you call Deer Scram up. They'll tell us to replace it for you, give you another batch of it, or mm-hmm. give you your money back. It's guaranteed.
Right.
So it's a win-win-win situation for everybody. And think about it. When you spend a couple $100 on plants, why not buy Deer Scram? I just want to save you a lot of money. But yeah. you think that I'd listen yeah. to my own advice, but hey,
no,
I didn't. And, but anyway, you know, in the vegetable garden, and the reason why I brought this up too is because, on our Facebook page, somebody had asked me about, hey, what's a good way to keep deer out of your garden? And apparently she had a very sizable garden, and a friend of mine did this, and we even had somebody comment on this before on the show. If you have the wherewithal or the space to do this, this is very effective. Find some old chain link fence,
mm-hmm.
roll it out flat, and deer don't like to walk on it, and put that around your beds.
Oh.
Because our Facebook friend had mentioned that they have an electric fence, and they still jump it.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like to walk on that chain link fence. And it was very effective for a friend of mine, and it made sense. But think about it. When you go to the old farms still today that are in existence, and I remember when I was a kid, you know, the gate would be wide open, and I would ask my dad, like, you know, hey, aren't they worried about those cattle getting out? Nope. Well, the gate's open, Dad. Nope. Well, you know how they have those metal
poles? Cattle gate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't walk on it.
Uh-uh.
So it all makes sense. So that's kind of a thing that may help. Now, of course, when you're in an urban environment, or, you know, a lot of us in these urban environments are in, you know, some of the areas that we live, I mean, we have some serious deer issues. So
sure.
you don't always have that ability to roll out chain link fence, and it could be a little ugly too. So I know that's not always the answer for everybody. But these are just a few plants when it comes to the vegetable world that deer rarely bother. Asparagus, carrots, and I know this, cucumbers. They never would bother my cucumbers, nor eggplant. I would always have flea beetle issues on eggplant, if anything, but they won't bother that. Peppers, rhubarb, onions. So those are some things that, for the most part, they rarely bother. Some things that they might occasionally bother, and I've not really seen this, you know, like, you know, you were saying corn, they'll get into that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But however, they can occasionally get into corn and all of a sudden just rage you right out. Cilantro, Brussels sprouts, you know, melons. Now, you know, I think sometimes they might bother melons, but usually it's the raccoons.
Mm-hmm.
But these are deer favorites right here, okay? These are Ernie's favorites.
Mm.
Beans.
Yeah.
Broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
Cabbage.
Yes.
The carrot tops. So those are some favorites. Dill. I think that, no, dill's not a favorite one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, I wrote down a list here. I think I hit that in the wrong location. I need better glasses. Actually, I don't have my glasses
on
today.
You don't have them on. That's what
I know. Because I've been having some eye issues again. So, yeah. So I apologize.
No,
I can't see without my glasses. But sweet corn, sweet potatoes, those are some deer favorites. Tomatoes. But the thing about it is, that's why I'm talking about this. they're eating my tomato tops, but I see the tips on the ground. So it's like they take a bite and just spit it out.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, really?
Yeah, if you're going to eat it, eat it all.
Don't do that to me.
Yeah.
Come on, dude. But maybe, like I said, if I take my own advice, use some of those deer products. Deer scram's a great one, and you're only going to find that at your local garden centers and nurseries. I got to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Liquid fence, a lot of people like that. Pretty stinky, though. A lot of garlic and egg in it, but it's a scent that will, you know, it will keep deer away. But you got to use these products.
Sure.
You can't allow any time to lapse in between, but they are, to a degree, they're very effective.
What about hostas?
Oh, hostas. okay, that might not be a vegetable but that the deer like. However, I will call that a steak sandwich for deer.
Because we have them along the side of the house, and just we get to maybe enjoy a couple of days of their bloom, and then you'll come out of the house to sit on the porch to have a little coffee and notice stubs. They will just nibble them down.
They look like celery stalks.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that aggravating?
Yes, it is.
Boy, when you see that and you think about all the hard work and the time that you put into working on your garden or your landscape, only to see that, whoa.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people that have really thrown in the towel and said, hey, I'm done. I'm not, I can't beat these guys. You know, up there in Fort Wright, they're really bad. Fort Thomas, they're really bad. And, I mean, they'll just eat the living daylights out of your stuff. What do you do?
I've learned to enjoy them. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Jason from Herman Services going to be joining us at 8 o'clock. We need to pause for a moment, but when we come back.
Yeah, I want to touch on something that a lot of people are experiencing some issues with, and that is our tomato plants. And we were just talking about the tomatoes and deer eating them, but it's not that problem. What's happening to the blossoms? You know, we're starting to see a little bit of blossom drop, and the fruit's not setting. But a couple things that you might want to do and consider when it comes to that.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Jason from Herman Service is going to be joining us here in about 15 minutes or so. And we'll have a lot to talk to him about everything and anything around the house. So it's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. You got some projects going on, so I'm sure you have a few questions for Jason.
Never.
You always have something going on, Ernie. Mm-hmm. What else?
Now, the wife says if I'd finish one or two things, it'd be really nice. I'm a great starter. I'm not a finisher.
You know, it's funny you say that because I just purchased a book the other day, and it was written by a Navy SEAL called Make Your Own Bed. I haven't started it yet, but... I just picked it up, but it's one of those things. That's where you start. You start by making your bed every morning and progress on throughout the day and be productive.
Yeah.
Knock out the projects. Don't leave them lingering.
Mm-mm.
So I see that you have several going on at one time.
Yeah, but we finished quite a few things over the staycation.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you get a lot done by just staying at home.
Oh.
A lot of people do that.
Yeah.
And that's even more important. That's even more reason to make our landscapes, our backyards, and everything more hospitable and inviting. And that's the place where we go. We go home every day to where we need to relax from a long day's work.
Mm-hmm.
And why not make the home that place where there's just, it's tranquil, it's peaceful, it's quiet, it's enjoyable, it's all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Blossom drop on tomatoes seems like it's being a little bit of an issue here as of recent, and several people have been into the store, the garden center, and they're having some issues with the blossoms not setting on their tomato plants. And sometimes, too, as well, it's not always just the tomato plant that we can have this particular issue with. Also, peppers. This is also an issue that plagues our bell peppers and so forth, and even some of the jalapeno peppers, the cayenne peppers. So when we lose the blossoms and the fruit's not setting or we're just not getting pollination, and a lot of times that has a lot to do with, you know, extreme temperatures. When temperatures fluctuate from one extreme to the other, those things happen. You know, when temperatures are too cold, too hot, weather's too dry or too wet, soil might be it might be a little too fertile a lot of times, or it could be very deficient in minerals and nutrients. So these are some of the reasons why that happens. Now, I will say this. When a plant drops its blossoms, you know, just be patient. Don't take it personally. Just wait it out a little bit. When temperatures are favorable, they will flower again. Rest assured, you're more than likely to see them flower again. Mm-hmm. Now, those are just things that make that happen. And when we're talking about too much, too rich of soil, too fertile of soil, a lot of times, I know there's a lot of people out there that you're planting your tomato plants with Miracle-Gro soil, which has fertilizer in it, and you're using fertilizer on top of it, and all you get is green, green growth. Tall, tall plants, and it's because of the nitrogen. And when it's all done and said, at the end of the day, I don't care how tall your plants are, how big they are, or if they're up over the garage roof, how much fruit do you get to pick? That's what it's all about.
Yep.
How much fruit do you get? I don't care if that thing's up over your garage and you can climb it and peer out over the neighborhood. You know, a lot of times, too much nitrogen brings about these problems, amongst others. You know, we can talk a little bit, too, about blossom end drop. But we're talking about blossom drop on tomatoes. It's really weather-related. And it also has to do with, you know, we need to protect our pollinators, too, and also the wind pollinates. So we need all these things to be present. There are a couple of items that you can pick up that will help with fruit set if you're having this particular problem. And I'm not going to necessarily say that you need to go out and do this, but it does help. I've never used it, and if someone has, I would like for you to share with us your experiences, actually. But Fertilume makes a blossom set product that's for tomatoes and also for peppers. And what it does, it helps that fruit set before that blossom drops. How it actually works or what the ingredients are, I don't know right offhand. But I know that there are those types of products that are available to help with that. Now, of course, if you have a lot of tomatoes and, you know, that's kind of like out of the question to spray everything, certainly don't do that. Like I said, all in good time, you're more than likely to see your plants blossom and flower again. So hang in there, be a little patient, and just let Mother Nature do her own thing without trying to change it for her. But that's been an issue lately.
Yeah, and, you know, you're offering great advice. Sometimes we overreact right away and think, oh, it's dead, mm-hmm. you know. And the plant is telling us something. We just have to make sure we're aware of what it's trying to say. And just sometimes the best thing is to leave it alone.
Leave it alone. And, you know, that has a lot to do with weather, you know, and just things pollinating. So there's times when this occurs. But it's extreme fluctuations, it's environmental, and like I said, don't fret it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something else, I was just talking to somebody the other day, they're telling me that they're seeing these black sunken lesions that are underneath their tomato fruits or their pepper fruits, and really what that comes down to, what it is, it's a lack of calcium to the pepper plant or to the tomato plant that is causing that fruit to do just that. As that fruit starts to develop, and there isn't enough calcium available to it, it's not going to take it in. So therefore, that's the end result. You get blossom end rot. Also, you could have calcium available to that plant, and this is when good watering habits are of the utmost importance. Going from extreme dry to extreme wet all the time, that causes blossom end rot, and also as well as too high of nitrogen fertilizers. If you think about this, the old farmers, they always used 10, 10, 10. That first number, nitrogen, they rarely ever went over 10 for a reason. They want bloom production. They want fruit production. They want fruit set. They're not trying to get all plant growth. So stay under 10, if at all possible, when you're fertilizing your vegetables. Hello, Ernie, you with me?
I am. When you're fertilizing your vegetables.
You're not a vegetable guy, are you? Do you grow a lot of vegetables?
No. Lisa does that.
Oh.
You were talking about the 10, 10, 10. The reason they don't use 10 is because they want.
I'm just giving you. Yeah. No, I just feel like I'm talking too much. I don't want to talk too much. But
well, let me stop you then. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We do need to pause for a moment. Our friend Jason is going to be joining us here in just a few minutes, but we got a message on our Facebook page from the Williamsburg Garden Club. Their garden tour is happening today, so I posted that on our Facebook page. You can jump on that and get some more information. If you get time, get to the locally owned, independently operated garden center and then go to the garden tour and enjoy your day. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and our friend Jason from Herman Services joined us again. Good to have you back again.
I am glad to be here.
Yep. And we talked about this earlier in the show, how now we're at the mid part of the season. It just happens in the blink of an eye, and a lot of homeowners are thinking, okay, we've got them ready with their lawn and their flowers. Now it's the sort of time to do a little mental check about the house.
Mental check?
Yeah, just think. And you have said this before, people don't think about something until it's broken.
Yeah, some of the biggest things we run into now is we have a lot of hose bibs that are, people are using hose bibs again and stuff like that. And we're coming to the end of that, to where they, the first time of the year they went out, they washed cars, squirted down the sidewalks and everything else. And then they go down into the basement and they got a flooded basement. And it's from the hose leaking. It froze over the winter.
Yep.
We are coming to the end of that now, so we're not running into it as much as we were. But we're getting a lot of sewer stoppages and stuff like that lately, too. Oh. And I think that's because we had more of a drier summer last year. So the roots only have one place to get water when you have a summer and a fall like that. And they grow pretty heavily in the sewers. And then when spring comes and you start getting all this water, then we end up with a lot more stoppages. And then spring is a good root growing season also.
You know, I didn't really ever think of it like that. When the dry season, the roots will try to find that source of water, and it's readily available for them.
Oh, yeah. And you've seen how strong roots can be when you see sidewalk blocks lifted and stuff like that. So imagine what a piece of pipe down in the ground, a defenseless little piece of pipe that's full of something they want.
Yeah.
You know, so you've seen what they can do with a sidewalk block. Imagine what they can do to a pipe underground.
Jason, do you see that with, I see that whole picture and scenario with, like, the clay tile drainage. You ever see that with, like, PVC or anything? Can it disrupt that or change that or alter that in any way?
The only time that there's a problem with PVC is if there was some kind of leak. If the PVC is installed properly and there's no leakage or anything like that, it doesn't know the water's there.
And it just goes around it.
So, it doesn't even go near it. So we don't have that problem at all with plastic. But if there is a small separation or for some reason there's water around the plastic, it'll crush the plastic faster than it will the concrete.
You know, it's amazing how tree roots work. I just finished a book called The Hidden Life of Trees. And the root systems, come to find out, they help one another when one another is in trouble. They know that stuff, and they know where that water is, or they'll give other nutrients to trees that are lacking nutrients. Really an interesting take. But to find water like that, that's incredible how tree roots just intuitively just figure that out.
I
mean, without talking, you know, just doing their job. When you're out and you're looking at these issues, are you using a camera and so forth, and you're getting into those drain pipes and finding all that? And what do you do? How do you handle that?
So nowadays when we have a sewer stoppage, the first thing we want to do when we get there is to alleviate the water problem. So we're going to run an old-style auger-style cable down through there, and our goal with that is to get the water down. And then once we get the water down, then we automatically, we don't charge an extra charge. We run a camera down through it. Back in the days, we didn't have cameras, so you just kind of did it by feel.
Or I'm 50 feet in, and that's where she stops.
When I was younger, I'd run the cable out over and over and over again until it quit coming back with roots on it. But nowadays, once we get that water down, we can stick the camera down there. We actually have four cameras now. We have two of them that have video recording capabilities, so mm-hmm. that we can make videos of them. But for the most part, we're doing it to make sure that we do a good job and that you're not having this problem again right after we walk out the door or sure. a few months later. We want to be able to clean out that drain and then be able to warranty it for you and tell you that, yeah, this thing's going to stay open for a while.
Right, right.
Otherwise, tell you that you need to do this so that it does stay open for a while. But we start out by running the cable, then we'll run the camera through, and then from there we decide we need to run the cable a couple more times. And then we also have a hydro jetter, which is like a truck-mounted pressure washer with special ends that we run down through there. Mm-hmm. And it uses about 4,000 pounds of pressure at about 9 gallons a minute. And it'll blast the whole entire and clean the inside of the pipe and get the entire inside of that mm-hmm. pipe clean. And that thing will cut through roots, grease. A big thing that we run into nowadays is all the flushable wipes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being a plumber, we don't consider any flushable wipes actually flushable. I think it's in your best interest to not flush them down your toilet. They just cause nothing but problems.
When you were on the show a couple of months ago and brought that up, it was one of those products where you go, what a wonderful idea. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that I'm creating a bigger problem for myself. Yeah. We have Jason from Herman Services with us. And Jason, we have Rick on the line from Goshen, who's got a question for you about addressing surface roots and pipes. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. Go ahead. Jason can hear you.
Hey, Jason. Former Roto-Rooter fellow, so I hear you, brother. pulled out many a raccoon. Is what I thought it was, but it was just roots.
Yeah.
Hey, here you go. I've got a 1950s farmhouse. They planted the maples that are probably in the same era.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful, but the problem I'm having, the roots that have come to the top of the feeder, well, you tell me what it is, but the roots are exposed, so when you're running the mower over that, you got to be real careful. Right now, I've got them all spray painted with orange.
so you don't hit them. Whoa.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I guess this is sort of a mixture between the two hosts that you've had. But, and we know the reality of maples and exposed lines. You got any advice?
As far as on the plumbing side of it, if they're getting into the drain lines, you know, the best thing to do is, or if you're assuming they're getting into the drain lines, the best thing to do is to run a camera through and verify it. And then if it is a constant root problem, they do make a foaming root killer nowadays. It's called okay. Rootex. It works pretty good for a maintenance type of product.
Well, the other issue for me is that I'm on septic and I want to be careful not to contaminate.
Yeah, you do want to be careful with that, with the Rudex, and it's not going to work very good for the septic system.
You think the foam would?
I think it's like a root. It's like a root killer, so I would assume that the Rudex would also damage the bacterial growth in the septic system.
My other concern was using copper sulfate, but on the exit line, I don't want to kill anything. I don't want to contaminate.
Yeah, we used to use copper sulfate in the past. I would be, with septic systems nowadays, I would be very hesitant to add any kind of additive.
Bottom line is a mechanical cleaning then.
Yeah, I would do a mechanical cleaning. You know, you have possibilities, like if the line's in really bad shape, you know, nowadays we can put a liner down through the line so you don't have to dig up your entire yard.
Yeah.
Or dig up and replace the line and put plastic in so you never have to worry about it again. But I would be very hesitant to put any kind of additive in that's going to kill roots, because that additive is also going to kill off the bacteria.
Yeah, I just want you hit it on the head. I just want to confirm the thought.
Okay.
Appreciate it. You guys got anything you want to say to me about what's happening with the surface roots, other than, once again, mechanically?
It's pretty common what you're seeing with the larger trees, especially older heritage trees, you know, as they age. You know, those root feeder systems, they're quite complex. very broad. You know, they can go out as far as the drip line.
Oh, yeah.
And they're searching for moisture. And when there's a lack of moisture, whatever. And you know, for homeowners who will water often but not deep, a lot of that water's at the surface. So those roots come up to the surface. And when we go through periods where, you know, we have very little rainfall, when we do, that moisture's just at the top. And that's what you're seeing, is that activity.
And I'll wrap it up with these trees. We never water. It's a farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
God does his thing, and we take what he gives us.
Right, right. You know, my next question, too, I know a lot of times when you have those leach fields and so forth, and trees can really create a lot of problems in regards to that. You know, depending upon the problem there, you know, that will also dictate, does that tree stay or does that tree have to go? However, there's large trees like that. I'm sure they're close to the house, and they provide a lot of protection.
Yes.
And provide shade, you know. It sounds like to me, just trying to keep that as clean as best as you can. You have that experience, obviously.
Yep.
But I think there's a lot more benefit here yet to come or at the present to just leave it be.
I'd rather live with the root surface than to weigh the benefits of the tree itself.
Right, right.
Hey, I think I've used up enough time. Hey, guys, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. As I leave, if you got anything to say, because my woman just bought begonias, and yeah.
You got work to do.
You know what? It's a labor of love.
Yes.
Don't touch the garden if you're not interested in it.
There you go.
Guys, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
appreciate
Rick.
The show.
All right, thank you. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Jason from Herman Services joining us this morning. You can get to their webpage at hermanservices.com or call them at 531-407-5177. And we need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Jason. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Jason, our friend from Herman Services, joining us again. We were talking with Rick on the line about ground surface roots and some of those challenges. Boy, there just aren't any good answers in a situation like that.
And I thought that was a great call we just had a moment ago, because talking about the septic tanks and the leach fields and all that stuff. A friend of mine had purchased some trees from us last year, and I had taken them out to his new home. It's just new construction.
Mm-hmm.
And he was told, do not plant trees anywhere up in this whole area.
Mm-hmm.
And do you do a lot of work on septic tanks and things of that nature? And do you find that's really 9 times out of 10 the issue where trees are in those areas, or maybe driving over top of those areas, compacting it?
I would say that the biggest issue is misuse of the system.
Uh-huh.
But you do need to be careful to not plant trees in those areas. And then in the newer septic systems, they run anywhere from $25,000 to $55,000 to install. So when somebody tells you don't plant trees out there, you really need to take that serious. And then with the older system, sometimes people just don't know what's actually under the ground. If you do have a septic system, you know, sometimes it's wise just to make a phone call. We can come out and look at some things, give you an idea of what's going on, mm-hmm. and tell you, yeah, definitely do not plant a tree near this. So you do run into it. But most of the systems that we have, failing systems, are either lack of maintenance or a lot of misuse of the system, where the system's just generally overused. You know, nowadays with all our water savings and everything else,
right?
I feel like we tend to use a lot more water than what these systems are designed for. You know, it's just
We take it for granted. We do.
We use a lot of water, and I think it kills a lot of these systems. And a lot of times these systems weren't designed to last the length that they're lasting, and they're just towards the end of their life anyways. Mm-hmm.
What about cisterns? Do you do any work on cisterns by chance? And the reason why I'm thinking of this, because my dad was just talking the other day. He has a camp that's out there off of Visalia, and somebody was in there and did an inspection on this cistern. Somebody he knows, and do they seal those? Do they paint those? What do they do?
We don't actually seal cisterns up, but we do work on the pumps for them.
The like pumps,
the foot valve, the pump, the bladder tanks.
Right.
And the water distribution part of the system. But we do not work on the tanks themselves. And it's actually kind of hard to find. Like, I don't even have anyone to recommend right now.
Right.
If somebody was having a problem, if they had a crack in a cistern or whatever else where it needed to be resealed. And then with a lot of the home sales that are going on nowadays, their inspections and the banks, they really want these things, everything to be perfect. So they're requiring a lot of people to have stuff done to their cistern tank.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no one out there to actually do the work. You know, there's less and less cistern tanks in our area. Mm-hmm. There's less and less people that are available that know how to do that kind of work.
I would still think there would be a fair amount in some of the outer lying areas or rural areas, but when he was talking about that the other day, I thought, you know, I don't think much about that, but I'm sure there are a lot of people that have the cisterns and so forth, and he had mentioned that, and I thought, yeah, I wouldn't even put that together.
We do everything from the pumps, which we work on the pumps quite often, and the shallow well pumps, but we've gone as far as design filtration systems and stuff like that, chlorinators and everything else to make that water actually safe to drink. So we do a lot with them. It's not something that we do every single day, but we do work on them.
I just thought I'd ask you to throw that out there, because when my dad was talking about the other day, I just thought, that's kind of interesting. You don't think about that often.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have a friend, Jason, from Herman Services with us. And, Jason, we have Christy on the line from Covington, who's got a question. Christy, are you curious if you have a leach line, or are you trying to identify if you have a leach line?
I know positively that we do have a leach line. The water guy was there and said that the people that owned the house before, the septic tank was overflowing, and they made them fix it all. But now I don't know where my leach, I don't know how, you know, I don't know nothing about the property. I bought it basically as is, so.
Okay, basically for us to figure that out, we would have to come out and we would use our video camera, and we would run a camera through the lines. And we have a locator that can locate where that head of that video camera is. So then we can map it out on the ground and actually show you where those things are, and in the process, inspect the system and kind of give you an idea what kind of shape it's in.
So, Christy, you're in Covington. Are you in one of the rural areas of Covington? Like, has it been annexed?
No, I'm right by the river, but the Ohio River. But my place is down here, close to Kentucky Speedway.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, that's what you're trying to determine is whether or not where the leach line goes. And whether it's in decent shape. Okay.
I know it's working. I know it goes into my septic tank, and my septic tank is draining and everything else. But I don't know where it is. It's like in the yard where I can put stuff, you know.
Yep.
Be safe to be able to put, you know, a garage or a shed or something like that.
Oh, you definitely want to find out where those lines are before you do a construction project like that.
Right.
But the only way is somebody's going to have to run a camera down through it. And then be able to locate where that camera head is as they go.
You don't think I would be able to, like, go to the city building and maybe see if they got something on it or anything?
It's worth a shot, but it's highly unlikely that you would be able to get a reliable...
It was probably privately or something.
Yeah, and it would be unlikely that you would get a reliable drawing of what it is with good measurements.
I find all kinds of pipes all over in my yard since I've been mowing the grass and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, there is, like, big, giant holes with pipes everywhere, and I don't know.
Depending on what kind of system is, some
they're
of
them. They're, like, in my front yard, in my side yard, in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, like, finding a different hole. They're all the way at the end of my property, and it's, like, I don't even know what them are for.
That would be something that
I don't know if
there's
drainage off of the hill or what.
Okay.
Well, give Herman Services a call, because I think what you're doing right now, you're taking the right approach, the proactive approach, And you'll know. I mean, that's important to know. Then you can build upon that exactly how that's mapped out, and that would be well worth it.
Okay.
It's five. Great. It's 513 service.
513 service.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
yeah.
thank you
very
much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Jason from Herman Services in with us. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with him. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Jason from Herman Services in with us. And again, you can get to their site, HermanServices.com, or give them a call at 513-SERVICE. And we've covered a lot of ground already, Jason. They had a couple of calls to get things started, but wanted to check with you. What's going on at Herman Services?
Right now, this time of year, we're done with our regularly scheduled heating and air conditioning tune-ups.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got calls coming in every day for other people wanting to tune up their equipment. It's never too late to get your air conditioning equipment tuned up. And then we're also have on the hotter days, we're getting lots and lots of emergency calls with heating and air conditioning. On the plumbing side, we've got lots of just a lot of drain cleaning, a lot of main sewers, a lot of roots in lines and stuff like that. That's mm-hmm. really starting to build up. And then our electrician, he's installing ceiling fans. He's got panel replacements and stuff like that. So overall, right now we're generally in our, this is our busy season, our busy time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of different projects going on right now. A lot of people that save projects for the summer months. So we're doing a lot of light remodel jobs and stuff like that, and a lot of maintenance type stuff. But a big thing that people need to keep in mind right now is their air conditioners. As it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, it's always a good idea to get that system checked up. It's basically like an oil change for your air conditioner. So they're coming out, they're making sure that your coils are clean, that that your charges are correct on the outside and the unit's doing what it's supposed to do. Sometimes, like this time of year, people's equipment will work and they think everything's fine, but then as it gets hotter and hotter, the equipment is less and less able to keep up, and usually it means that there's something actually wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times a routine maintenance we'll catch that before it becomes a bigger problem.
We were talking about how plants will sometimes alert us that there might be an issue. Our mm-hmm. equipment, our AC and furnace and everything else does a little bit of the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as one of the things that you mentioned about coming out and servicing like an AC unit, do you find where people will try to hide them and plant things around them and it causes issues?
We do run into that a lot of times. A lot of times it's that they planted too much stuff to make sure that you couldn't see the unit.
Yeah.
And then, something to keep in mind, you need to keep those plants a couple feet away.
Yeah. What's the rule of thumb? How far?
I think in the code, we want to keep it, we want to keep like 18 inches at least on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
That way you can get airflow into it. So basically an air conditioner, it sucks air in
right.
through the sides and then it blows it out the top.
Gotcha.
And it's doing that to cool off the refrigerant inside the unit. So that it can go back into the inside and be used to cool the air on the inside. If there's no airflow on the outside, then it doesn't cool properly. It might not be able to keep up with the temperature that you want on the inside, but it's probably also costing you a lot more money to run your air conditioner when it's in that condition.
Because it's working harder.
It is
trying
working,
to do more.
It is working a lot harder, and then it starts to hurt internal components and stuff like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So just trimming around the thing really works well. Make sure there's no garbage or leaves or anything built up. Make sure there's no vines growing into it. And just keep that general area clean and free. And then try to make sure that there's nothing. Like, we've had people build a deck right on top of an air conditioner unit. You know, it needs to be able to exhaust that air out, too. So you want to keep... You want to make sure that you keep a nice open space around it. When they do, so one thing that is good is having shade on that area, too.
Oh.
So as much as you want to keep that area open, you know, having a tree or having it on the shady side of the house is also a good thing for it. It doesn't have to work quite as hard as if it was sitting out in the direct sunlight.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Jason from Herman Services with us. We're talking a little about just routine maintenance things to do with your house. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we'll carry on our conversation with Jason. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Jason from Herman Services has joined us this morning. We've been covering a lot of ground. Mm-hmm. And I want to touch base before we get a couple of other things we're going to talk about, too, is you mentioned this a couple of times when you've joined us about avoiding those flushable products.
Yeah, flushable products became a really big thing, I would say about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. They had everything from flushable toilet bowl brushes to flushable cleaning wipes, to flushable personal wipes. And what we've run into in our industry is that we found that it's in your best interest not to flush any of them. It's convenient. It seems very sanitary. But that sanitary gain that you get by flushing all these things and disposing of them, you lose all the benefits of that when your sewer backs up and you have a basement full of unsanitary things.
Yeah.
But they basically, if there's any deficiencies in the pipe whatsoever, and that could be anything from roots to a catching point in two fittings that were glued together,
mm-hmm.
In a brand new plumbing system, they'll catch those wipes. And then they build up, and then they build up, and then they build up. And it's actually gotten us to the point where, you know, we had to spend a lot of money to buy, like I said, we have a hydro jetter now,
mm-hmm.
Because the cabling machines just don't work very well getting those out. And we actually have to use a hydro wash to wash those out of the system. And then from there, those wipes and stuff, they cause problems for the municipalities, for MSD. You know, they spend tons and tons of money keeping their drains open. And then they have whole systems down at their facility to try to get these wipes out of the system before they treat the water. So basically what happens is they just don't break down.
Right.
They last forever and they cause a lot of issues for a lot of people.
You might as well be putting a plastic bag down.
It is. And then we have low flow toilets and stuff like that. So the odds of them even being washed out to where they're not your problem anymore just doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, for the most part, they stay on your property, mm-hmm. and they become your problem.
Mm-hmm.
And some people get away with using them for years. Some people they pay the price the first few times they flush them down.
Sure. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We're talking with Jason from Herman Services. Earlier, we were talking about some line issues and line problems. A couple of things that you could offer our listeners, maybe new homeowners, that warning signs that there might be an issue?
Some warning signs, like especially with drain lines. And I always tell people it's much easier for us to clean out a drain when it's slow than it is to wait for it to be completely stopped up where there's absolutely nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a drain's starting to run really slow, that's the time to call us. Get it on the schedule, get it in. We can get there during normal hours, which will reduce the cost compared to emergency charge.
Mm-hmm.
If you're noticing a lot of bad smells down in the basement, it might be a sign that you're getting the beginnings of a sewer stoppage. And it's something that, like I said, even if it's not stopped up, you know, nowadays we can run the camera down through there and we can see, hey, there is something going on.
Right.
And it's much easier to fix when it's a small problem than, mm-hmm. than when it's a big problem. So look for those smells. And when the drain starts to run slow or a toilet's not flushing correctly, or doesn't feel like it's flushing all the way through, or you have to flush it 2 and 3 times to make it work correctly, that's the time to call us before it becomes an emergency.
Gotcha. 749-D105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. You can get a hold of them at HermanServices.com or 513-SURFACE. And Tony was going to ask you about the French drain. What exactly is a French drain?
Well, it's a way of channeling water away from the foundation or away from an area around the home that pools.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, you know this as well as I. It seems like sometimes, you know, when we get rain, it's all or nothing. You know, a lot of times, you know, it's a 2-3 inch kind of gusher, so to speak.
Right.
And, you know, when you have water that's moving around your home, around the foundation, or coming off the gutters, down the downspouts, getting that water away from the home is important. And we've had several calls in the past, Jason, that people are like, you know, do you know anybody that does this kind of work where they'll set up and there's French drains? It's where you're running the piping. Explain it to us, but you're running the piping, Ernie, underground. It collects it and takes it away from the home.
Yeah. Basically, when we install a French drain, you're putting some kind of like gravel bed in the ground with a pipe in it, and the pipe has holes in it, and it's designed to absorb that groundwater and then direct it away from wherever you want to direct it away from. And you're right, the rains that we've had this year, it's not a light, comfortable sprinkle. It's either 3 inches in an hour or nothing.
Right.
So we're getting calls every single day. We're rerunning downspout lines, because if those downspout lines aren't moving the water away from the house, then it's creating foundation problems.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's simpler issues is it's washing all the mulch out of beds and stuff like that. So we're doing a lot of work on downspout lines. We're doing a lot, trying to get, you know, somebody might have a sump pump that's, you know, kept their basement dry for quite a while. But with these big rains like this, all of a sudden they realize that sump pump line really doesn't move the water far enough away from the house. So we're extending a lot of those lines. We're redoing a lot of driveway drains. We've had a lot of jobs lately where we've had to put larger drains in people's driveway to handle these downpours that they've been getting.
Or they're getting in underneath the door.
In the drain, they just got a little 12x12 round lid with 18 holes in it that was installed in the 50s or 60s.
Right.
And now we're getting these rainstorms where you're just getting so much water, and we're putting a catch basin in there. Which much better grates and stuff like that, so that water can properly drain away from the house. But, you know, it's some big things to think about is, you know, when it is raining, is your downspout pipes, are they clear and open? Are they going somewhere? And we're, like I said, we have the video cameras and stuff like that where we can check these lines, trace them out. Sometimes, you know, more often than not, we find that they need to be replaced and taken somewhere to. And it's basically to protect your foundation and protect your belongings and protect your house to get that water away.
Yeah, I know a lot of homes, you know, they're a lot of them are relatively close to one another, you know, in some of these subdivisions. And usually, you know, there's water coming from two homes into one pooling area in between. And a lot of times, you know, that's a cesspool, too. You know, you get a lot of mosquito activity, but you need to get that water away before you start running into some potential problems. So I was just, you know, when we have people that call in on this French drain, I think that's a great point that you guys do that.
Yeah, we have done a lot of that work this year. Actually, the last two or three springs, we've really run into doing a whole lot of that work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's a specialty that people do that. But we've got a lot of experience in it, and sometimes it's complicated, but usually we can figure out a way to make it work.
What about some of the areas, too, that they're older areas, and I can give you a perfect example. My dad's had some issues where the main water line, too, that comes in from the street, you know, you always hear, like, well, who's responsible for that? You know, is that the city or is that the water department? Oh, this is in your yard. You know, this is your responsibility. I know you guys have fixed a lot of those types of issues, too. Is that pretty common? Or, you know, because a lot of the older areas, neighborhoods, a lot of what's underground's old, you know, and it's starting to break down.
It is. I was just down at the waterworks a few weeks ago for a meeting, and they're getting ready to start a big get the lead out program. And they have a pretty good idea how many lead water mains are still left, like privately owned water mains. And there's a lot of them, and we're still removing probably 10 of them a year. But, you know, as far as, you know, copper and lead, like lead that's in the ground now has been there for 70 years.
Wow.
So, and it works perfectly fine. It's a good idea to get rid of it. You know, it could be there and you not even know it's there and it's working perfectly fine. But as far as the responsibility of the water line, the waterworks is responsible from the middle of the street to where their curb stop is.
Where the meter is, perhaps? Is that part of
some, it? Well, in some properties, there's a meter out in the front yard, mm-hmm. and they'll take responsibility up to that meter, mm-hmm. and the meter itself. And then after that meter, you're responsible from the meter into the house. If the meter's in the house, you're still responsible for the line from basically the curb of the street into your house. So you're responsible for that. If for some reason it was the actual curb stop that was leaking, what we would do in that case is we would dig it up, and then once it was exposed, we would decide which side of the curb stop was actually leaking. If it was the waterworks side, they're responsible. If it's your side, you're responsible for it. But you would have to dig the hole to show them who was responsible for it.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have our friend Jason from Herman Services in with us. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Jason from Herman Services in with us. You get to their site, hermanservices.com, or call them at 513-SERVICE.
You know, just in a break, Jason and I were talking. I had asked him a question. I think this would be a very a lot of interest. You know, right now as the economy starting to turn, and there's a lot of new home construction, and you know we're relying on state inspectors to inspect, you know, the plumbing, the electrical, and all those other components of a newly built home.
Uh-huh.
You know, I didn't know if they ever would provide a service where you say, "Hey, I'd like for you to oversee this," or just spot potential problems or things of that nature, because, you know, there's a lot of times things get left undone or they're not caught.
Right.
And I think that would be an added value to where someone says, you know, it's like your friend that did the home inspections.
Chris Green.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I don't know, you know, is he a licensed plumber or anything of the sort? But, and you certainly don't want to step on the toes of the builder and who's doing all the work. But, you know, I just remember, you know, someone that I know that built the home, there were some really serious issues, and I just didn't know if you had provided that type of a service, if somebody would say, "Hey, would you just, as this is taking place, without stepping on toes, are there any potential issues?" Or if a homeowner wants to do it themselves, is there anything you would want them to just pay attention to?
I've never gotten a call to oversee the plumber of the construction of a house, but we do get calls quite often for people that are doing work on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always suggest that if they are installing their own bathroom, that I don't, you know, like a YouTube video isn't going to cut it for the most part. you know, you can call and you can have an inspector come and inspect your work.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to make sure that you do it by code if he comes in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times that'll save you a lot of grief and a lot of headaches in the long run. Because they'll come look at it when you do the stuff that's under the ground and behind mm-hmm. the walls. And it could potentially save you a lot of money
mm-hmm.
if they're finding something that you really did wrong. For instance, we had a job recently that it was a brand new bathroom in a basement, and just nothing would work right. And basically whoever installed the bathroom, they didn't run any kind of venting. So everything was just airlocked.
Yeah.
And no matter what you did, there's no way that you could make it work properly. And it was just that everything was incorrectly installed. And basically the solution is to tear out the brand new tile floor and the concrete and everything
right.
And start over from the beginning.
Right.
So if you are going to take a huge project like that on your own, you need to get somebody involved. You know, we have done work where we did the plumbing and then somebody else, you know, they do the easy, you know, maybe we did the underground plumbing and the stuff in the walls.
Right.
And then the homeowner installed the toilet and the vanity and the faucets and stuff like that on their own and did all the drywall and tile and stuff like that. So we took care of the part that, you know, if you screwed it up, it would be a major cost in the long run. And then they were able to take care of all the other stuff in that bathroom remodel. And I would suggest that if you're going to take on a project like that, because you're investing a lot of money and material into this stuff. And you don't want to make a mistake that makes this bathroom unusable or whatever else. And like I said, if you did want to do it on your own, you could always call, and most counties will walk you through the process of how to pull a permit and send their inspectors out to make sure that you did it correctly.
Right. You know, you touched on something there that I think a lot of people just don't think about when they think about plumbing or projects like this. And there are an awful lot of people who see the DIY network shows and, you know, you too can build a plane and fly it later that afternoon kind of thing.
That's a really good example. Like, you could build your own plane, but are you going to put your family in that plane and go fly across the country in it?
Is the venting. And I don't think people understand that. So now, if you don't mind, just take a second and explain the whole venting process.
As far as venting and plumbing goes, if you ever take like a 2-liter bottle and it's full and you're going to empty it out, if you turn it completely upside down, you know, sometimes nothing will come out at all, or else it'll gulp and gulp and gulp and come out. Well, a toilet flushing or water running down a drain works the same way. For water to go down, air has to come out somewhere, and that's what the vent is. So any drain that you have has to have some kind of vent associated with it, so that air will properly flow through the system and allow everything to easily go down the drains and run downhill and go out to the septic system or to the county provided sewer system.
So it sort of equalizes the pressure there, so that things can follow the natural gravity.
And the vent is just as important as the drain. So it will not work properly without proper venting.
I think it's valuable information, especially anyone that wants to try to take on that sort of.
And you got to remember, when you watch these shows on TV and stuff like that, you know, they're edited. So they're only showing you the interesting stuff. They're not showing you, you know, somebody trying to figure out how to run this vent, because vents, you know, vents aren't interesting. You know, the drain's interesting.
The ones that always crack me up are the ones that show someone painting. You're going to be there all day long. You
they
know?
Never show the edging. They never show them doing the edging.
Yeah, never roll it, never get cut it in. You know, I have another question, too, about plumbing. You know, loud noises, you know, when the wash machine's on or banging or clanging. What is that usually? You know, could that be your wash machine, or could it be air still in the line somewhere for whatever reason? How would you handle that or trace that back to its source?
Most banging noises in a water system nowadays are caused by solenoid valves or quick shutoff valves. So everything now is instant shutoff. It's not the old screw the handle until it turns off softly with a washer. Everything's on or off. And so basically you have this water flowing through the pipe at a certain velocity. And then you're hammering a valve close, and it's making all the pipes shake. Sometimes it could be a pipe in a wall that there's no way to get to it, and there's nothing you can do about it without cutting into the wall. Sometimes that banging has been going on for so long that it's broken the plastic straps down in the basement. You know, there's been a tendency to use all these different plastic straps to hang all the water lines down in the basement. And plastic, as it gets old, it gets brittle, and then you have this banging and vibration, and it'll snap those plastic straps off, and it'll make that banging worse and worse and worse over time, which is pretty easy to fix. You just put new straps on, and you're good to go. Some more extreme measures we've had to go through is to put in air arresters. which are little, like, they're little tees that we put in the line to mm-hmm. absorb some of that hammering. We've used expansion tanks to absorb some hammering to absorb that expansion.
Right.
It just depends on how bad it is and how far you want to go to fix it.
I just kind of noticed, you know, you're talking about that quick on and, you know, I guess open and close.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like now the washing machine, now we have an older washing machine, but now it's like, you know, as soon as the thing closes, like, boom, you just, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's nothing like over the top, but it's like, I never caught that before. You know, I never really heard that before.
And it might be something, just go down in the basement and look at the piping and make sure that you don't have missing straps. You can see some sagging in the water line, something like that. And that'll give that pipe room where it'll bounce, and it'll make a lot of noise when it does it. But nowadays, you know, almost all toilets have a valve that shuts off and it hammers closed.
Mm-hmm.
Most faucets now are something where it's really easy to shut them off fast
mm-hmm.
and make that sound again. Washing machines, ice makers, all those kind of things have an instant shut.
I got a lot of those things. I even have an irrigation system that kind of, you know, the solenoids. Like, I do have one more question, and it's backflow preventers.
Mm-hmm.
Can those go bad or not? Can you shed some light on that? And how would you know if it... Now, my meter's not running backwards or anything, but how would you know if that was bad or...
This is your backflow preventer
for my irrigation system.
For your irrigation
mm-hmm.
system.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, most backflow preventers for irrigation system needed to be tested on a yearly basis, and those tests need to be sent to the county. We do backflow testing. If they know about the backflow preventer, then it needs to be tested. They send you a letter, and we come out and we test it to tell you if it's working or not.
I didn't just open up a can of worms, did I?
you did a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did put one in, and now, you know, I even have a meter, but I just was curious. You know, that's to keep contaminants from coming back into the water source.
And they're very important to have.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you're like with an irrigation system, a lot of times you have sprinkler heads, and you'll notice after the irrigation system runs, there'll be some water pooling around that sprinkler head. And if there was some kind of instance where the water was shut off, like for a fire or something like that in the neighborhood, or a water main break, it could actually siphon that water that's laying on that ground back into the system. Well, if you had recently put down fertilizer or something like
mm-hmm.
that,
now right,
you're siphoning
right.
water
right.
that had fertilizer in it back into the system, which is very bad for the system. So they are important. When they start to go bad, usually, depending on what kind of device it is, it needs to be tested to tell you.
Well, Jason, as always, a wealth of information. Appreciate you coming by and visiting with us again.
Oh, I'm more than happy to come in.
So. And we'll have you back sometime soon. Jason from Herman Services, you can get onto their site, hermanservices.com. You can get onto their site through our Facebook page. They have one. And call 513-SERVICE. We'll talk to you soon. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Enjoy this beautiful weather.